You're listening to a Mutiny Transmission.
You can find more podcasts, videos, books, comics, and records online at mutinyinfocafe.com.
Or just stop in the store in Denver and have a coffee sometime.
Queen City Companion is a storytelling show that is totally false, made up or otherwise, whatever the artist makes of it. It is hosted by Denver comedian, actress, member of the Pussy Bros, and future best friend to Garth Brooks, Christy Buckley. This episode was recorded November 2nd and features performances from Allison Rose, Jaylane Ryan, Piper Shepherd, Harris Alterman, KB Jensen, and Zach Moss. The next episode of Queen City Companion will be recorded live Thursday, January 4th at 8 p.m. at Mutiny Info Cafe. Don't forget to like, review, and subscribe to the Mutiny Transmissions podcasts to keep up with any Queen City Companion episodes you may have missed or any of the other transmissions Mutiny hosts every Thursday, including Jim Norris's Stage Tales and Hello Denver, Are You Still There? With Bree Davies. You can find a complete calendar of events, podcasts, and more at mutinyinfocafe.com. Now, to kick off Christy Buckley's show with a live performance of the theme song, here's Calamity Champ's Piper Shepherd.
Shepherd, everybody. Give it up for her. I made her write that song for me. And then I made her bring it here, and I'm so grateful. She'll be back here in a little bit on to the show. Hi, guys. Welcome to Queen City Companion. I'm Christy Buckley. Guys, give it up for yourselves for coming out to this weird thing. Yeah, that's the right. Yep, you did it. That's the right part. You did it. For those of you who don't know what you just walked in, I will tell you that I also don't know what you just walked into. this is what I like to call an all-false storytelling show. I was asked to create a storytelling show, and there's a lot of true storytelling shows here in Denver, so I wanted to create something that allowed writers and performers and actors to all create some weird stuff, try some new stuff, so that's what we have here. The theme for tonight is the news, so every person was given that theme, and they are encouraged to use it and or ignore it. I don't really care. I just want, I just give people a prompt because some people like a prompt. And I also prepared something. I'll open the show with this. I did not write this per se. This piece was written by Denver comedian Nathan Lund. I'm like nervous because I'm doing something that's not stand-up, you guys. It's like terrifying. If I could just do my jokes, that'd be really easy, but I'm doing something that is like not my jokes. Anyways, this was written by Nathan Lund. He's a very amazing Denver comedian. He wrote it for a literary piece, and then I have adapted it to a monologue here. So this piece is called Getting the Light. 8:45 on the nose. The host was a professional. An unfunny hack, but a professional nonetheless. And the show was running right on schedule. Ladies and gentlemen, next up to the stage, our headliner is celebrating 35 years on stage. Please give it up for the very hilarious George Woods. 35 years on stage. That's all that could be said about my career. No late night with Johnny or Leno or otherwise. No Letterman. No sitcoms or movies, not even a goddamn commercial or two. Just 35 years, a time gone by. I never missed my kids' baseball game or dance recital because I never stopped to have kids. I probably would have been a terrible dad like my father. He was terrible. I would have just not been there, or maybe I would have just been restless or angry like he was. He sold vacuums for a living. I'm not so different. I sell pieces of myself. I almost quit 20 times over the last 35 years. I almost quit when that snake of an owner stiffed me in Pensacola. I almost quit when I had to file bankruptcy and live in my car for 6 months. I almost quit when my wife died. My first wife died. And then my second wife. I knew the end was coming for the last year of this 35 years. My doctor is my doctor because it's the only option my meager insurance will allow. I was always in the doctor, and she was always in a rush to get to her next patient. She was always overbooked. But last time I was there, she sat down with me, she spoke softly, and she was sorry. She said she didn't know when, but it was coming soon, and she was sorry. I could tell she meant it. Tonight, the crowd was great. They were a little chatty at first, but they settled down after about 10 minutes. I couldn't help but make fun of the guy in the front row. I was like, sir, oh man, I was gonna ask you to take off your hat, but that's just your hair. 30 minutes went by with jokes and me mostly making fun of the poor guy in the front row and his unfortunate haircut. And I realized that I never quit over these 35 years because I love to make people laugh. I never told anybody about the news the doctor gave me because, well, the comics I still talk to are mostly just coworkers. They're not friends. But I promised I would finish the gigs I had. Next week is Ames, Iowa. The week after that, Joplin, Missouri. And then my favorite club, Polly's, just outside of Houston. I was 30 minutes into the set, and it was going good. And I was so glad they were laughing. And like I said, it made me realize why I love comedy and I never quit. There's nothing better than the feeling of when you hear an audience roar with laughter that you caused. There's nothing better. There's not a better feeling, not even sex. Not even most sex, just not all, okay. About a few minutes later, I saw the light in the back. When you're a comedian and you're nearing the end of your set, the person working the booth will give you a light so that you can focus on your jokes and the audience and you don't have to worry about going over your time. But after 35 years on stage, I know what 45 minutes feels like, and I know that that light came too early. This is not the light from the booth. This is another light altogether. The light that let me know I was not going to make it to Polly's outside of Houston. And that's okay. The show usually ends sooner than you want it to. So I told the audience, let me get out of here on this one. And I did. Thank you guys. That's Nathan Lund's piece, Getting the Light. Okay, that's over. Let's have fun. Okay, awesome. I don't know what's going to happen next. Everybody could make you cry after this. I really don't know. I don't ask them what they're doing. I just want to see what they do and want to be surprised just like you guys. This next guy comes on stage. He's a very amazing comedian in Denver. I love to book him anytime I get a chance because he's just so weird and wonderful. Guys, big. It's also a big get because, wow, you probably didn't know this because nobody knew this, not even me, but he's a writer for The Washington Post. Please welcome to the stage Harris Alterman, everybody.
Hello, everyone. Yes, Christy is right. I used to be a comedian, but I retired a couple of years ago, and now I work for the Washington Post. I know this is supposed to be like a false storytelling show, but Christy told me the theme is the news, so she brought me in, and couldn't have been better timing because I have a true news story, which is mind-shattering. A couple months ago, we sent a reporter into the White House who placed a listening device in the Oval Office. A couple weeks ago, we went back in, we had someone take it out secretly, we went through the audio recording files, and we found a conversation that proves without a shadow of a doubt, I don't know if that's the correct phrase, that Donald Trump did collude with Russia in the 2016 election to get elected, without a shadow of a doubt. We made that conversation into a transcript. So if I could have maybe someone come up here and read with me as I can read as Donald Trump and someone can read as Mike Pence. Does anyone want to read as Mike Pence? Can I get a volunteer? Okay, you, sir. Brian, pretending I don't know you. You, sir, yeah. And this is top secret. This is the first time this has ever been read. Just to keep track of who's who. Once again, this was recorded a few weeks ago. The fake news won't stop with this Russia story. They won't stop. It's bad. Very, very bad.
I know. I can't sleep.
Me neither. I can't think straight. If only there was something I could do to relax.
Here, Mr. President, let me rub your shoulders.
Thank you. Oh God, that feels tremendous. Absolutely tremendous. Can you feel that terrible knot under my shoulder? It's just terrible.
Yeah, I feel it. Might be easier for me to get to it if you take your shirt off.
Okay.
There, that's much easier. God, your skin is so soft.
It's the best skin. No one's got skin that even comes close to touching my skin.
Oh, but my skin is touching your skin right now.
Ha, 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 ha. Mm, that's fantastic. You know, my thighs have been killing me as well.
What did you say, sir?
I said my thighs have been killing me.
Sorry, one more time?
I said my thighs have been killing me.
Oh, well, perhaps I could be of help.
Here, let me take off my tremendous pants so it's easier for you.
Wow, sir. Who knew that underneath your pants were such fantastic thighs? My hands can hardly grip them.
Oh, please. You sound like Ivanka.
And, sir, may I say what a terrific bulge you have.
Michael, do you want to see what's underneath my underpants?
It would be an honor, sir.
I'd like to introduce you to a great friend of mine, Willie Trump.
Willie,
can we just pause real fast? I know that people are laughing, but this, it's just like Donald Trump has become like this big spectacle in the media that we all laugh at, like he's some big form of entertainment. And it, I think we really need to focus on politics and just kind of be serious about this. Okay, continue.
Willie, what a pleasure to meet you. In my family, we usually greet people by putting them in our mouths. May I, sir?
You may. Oh, yeah, that's it. Suck it good, you little slut.
May I play with your balls, sir?
Yeah, give them a smack, you little bitch. Okay, at this point, Jeff Sessions entered the room. If I could have someone else come up and read, perhaps, is Jeff Sessions. Just one volunteer. It's not going to be that bad. Oh, okay, you were already on the show. Yes, Piper, come up. It's much better if audience members do, but, well, Piper, does anyone else want to instead of Piper? Oh, this guy wants to do it. Okay, Jeff Sessions, ladies and gentlemen.
Here, you can use this. And just to keep track of who's who,
thank you.
So this is Jeff Sessions. You can use the microphone.
Oh, good.
So Jeff Sessions has just entered the room.
Mr. President, what the hell is going on? And mainly, why wasn't I invited?
Strip down, Jeff, and get your dirty ass over here.
Mike, can I suck on your feet while you suck on the president?
Yes. But leave my socks on. I like it with my socks on.
Yes, sir.
Before you suck on his feet, come over and put one of those weird fucking ears in my mouth.
Yes, sir.
Oh, yeah. Just watching that ear in your mouth, sirs. Sorry. It's making my asshole flex in and out.
So at this point, John Kelly and Rex Tillerson enter the room. If I could get two more people to come up and be John Kelly and Rex Tillerson, can I get two more volunteers? Please. This is, if you care about democracy, if you care about America, if you care about the truth, please, can I get two more people?
I'll help.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah. I'll be Rex.
Okay, you can be Rex.
Can I get one more person to be John Kelly? John Kelly. Okay, Piper. Listen, people. This is real, okay? This is the problem in America, is everyone's too afraid of the truth. Everyone's caught up in the fake news.
I got it.
John Kelly.
Mr. President, what the hell is going on?
And mainly, why weren't we invited?
Rex, get over here and put a finger in my ass.
John, same goes for you. This ass ain't gonna finger itself.
I don't care whose ass has fingers in it, as long as one of those asses is mine.
I brought crack if anyone wants to smoke some.
Sure, load a bowl in my ass and smoke out of my ass.
Let me get a hit.
Me too. I love getting high by smoking crack out of a man's ass.
All right, at this point, Rick Perry, Steve Bannon, Betsy DeVos, Sarah Huckabee Sanders, and Ben Carson all enter the room. If I could just get 5 volunteers to come up. Okay, we got one. It's, listen, people, it's only half a page longer. 1, 2. I got some more name tags for you guys.
I got, here's Steve Bannon, who needs
okay,
it?
You're gonna be Ben Carson. Fantastic. Okay, you're Rick Perry.
You wanna come read with me?
You're Sarah Huckabee Sanders. Do we have a Betsy DeVos?
Ben Carson.
We need a Betsy DeVos. Come on, okay. One more person, be a Betsy DeVos.
You guys, this is very serious. Sir, if you could just come be Betsy DeVos, thank you so much.
Betsy DeVos.
Come on, Carlton. Come on over.
So, Rick Perry. Where's Rick Perry?
Mr. President, what the hell is going on?
And now Steve Bannon, Betsy DeVos, Sarah Huckabee Sanders, and Ben Carson all in unison.
And why weren't we invited?
Everyone, take your fucking clothes off and hop in.
I may have lost the presidency, but I'm gonna win this orgy.
Rex, give me some of that crack. Donald, let me sit on your ugly slut face. Betsy, punch me in the stomach.
For sure. Let me just suck Steve Bannon's pulsing member for a few minutes.
Oh, fuck, I'm gonna come.
Oh, fuck, I'm gonna come too.
Oh, fuck, I'm gonna come too. Oh, fuck, I'm gonna come too.
Oh, fuck, I'm gonna come too.
Oh, fuck, I'm gonna come too.
Hey, you guys remember when we all colluded with Russia to rig the election? So as you can see, our democracy in disaster. Please call your senator to get Donald Trump impeached, because this is just ridiculous. Thank you very much.
Straight from the Washington Post, you guys. Harris Alterman. Wow. Oh my gosh, that was awesome, you guys. That's not exactly what I pictured for the show, but pretty close. Yeah, I just wanted us all to come together. That was the goal. Okay, I'm going to keep this right on going because we have so many awesome people. This next lady come to stage, she is also an amazing Denver comedian, but she's also an amazing writer who has not finished something other than a joke since she started stand-up. This is the first thing, so I'm very excited to hear it. Please welcome to stage Allison Rose, everybody.
Oh, this is terrifying. Okay. Anna stepped out of her house and onto the quiet old road that used to be a main highway, cutting straight through the heart of her small town, a beacon of black that rushed progress right through. She paused directly on the yellow line that divided the once present traffic, remembering how she used to shake her fists at speeding trucks, yelling, "People live here, you know," until she'd finally realized it wasn't their fault. Tom Crick had made it clear one morning over gas station coffee when they were talking about whether the town would make a good place for witness protection or for a criminal, if it was a good place to go if you didn't want to get found. She had argued you'd stick out like a sore thumb. Really no place to hide in a town where everyone knows everybody. Then Tom had said it, "Anna, nobody knows we're here but us." As if to say, no one's going to find you if you're nowhere. Her feet shuffled blindly across the empty road. A new highway from the state had pushed traffic around, ignoring all their old buildings, useless chopped rectangles that had softened in rain and were now threatening to crumble in the dry heat of July. The hills they'd built up to support the new highway just made it harder to see from the middle of town, keeping them in with uneven earth. And that reshaped land only lifted up so high into the air so cars and trucks could pass their town by without intersecting pickups and tractors. There wasn't any talk of making it to the clouds. The trains the town was built around had abandoned it long before the black. The post office was only a half a block down Main Street, and Main Street was only two blocks away. The corner where Main met what was left of the old highway housed an old brick building. Anna approached it and glanced at the faded paint by its entrance. The letters read, Bank, but Anna remembered it as a grocery store and then a home. Now it wasn't anything. The woman who'd owned it said she was doing the town a favor by preserving it, but never did anything to keep it from caving in. So the city had bought it sometime last year, and they were tearing it down next week to make room for an empty lot that wouldn't threaten the ground with careening bricks. The man who'd last lived there had never finished painting its outsides. Forgotten baby blue paint ran halfway up its front, trying to touch the light sky up above, but smashing against the solid gray of bricks that cut off its color like a television gone gray. 3 a.m., with everyone asleep, and no one had realized there was nothing left to see. Anna walked by it, directing her eyes back to the ground. She stepped into the post office and headed to her box. The number she was looking for was smushed in the middle of the north wall, 360. The numbers went up to 600, surpassing the population of the town by 148. She wondered which boxes were lonely as she twisted the dial back and forth, and if the postman sometimes stuffed empty envelopes inside them just to make it look right. She pulled the local newspaper and an electric bill from the slot. The paper slogan was a little on the nose, the only newspaper in the world that cares about Franklin, Kansas. She flipped to the back. Every week the editor wrote a letter to himself on page 6, a good night and good luck, after 5 pages filled with stories of tea with visiting relatives, school events, 4-H scores, and obits. Once in a while, he'd write something political in his column, quietly, using the names Bush, Obama, and Kennedy in the same line to keep people guessing where he stood. Anna didn't have much use for the rest of the paper. All of the stories were of schools or deaths, a sheet of obituaries sometimes filling page 3. Since she was neither a child nor dead, but stuck somewhere in between with little family to tie her to the ends, she didn't have much to gain from the paper. But she kept her subscription for a couple columns, and because it wasn't hurting anyone to recycle it each week under the litter box in her home. Her eyes scanned toward the bottom of this week's column to read, "Whatever the problem facing us in America, we have the answer staring at us in the mirror." She was sure he'd made it uplifting on a later draft. Sure, the early versions had started as a rant, an outpouring of opinions he couldn't share outside the walls of his house for fear of losing subscribers. Sure, it had held a name he heard each day on the television, but never once mentioned understanding that no one would agree. A small paragraph, 5 lines, followed to basically read, "Cold week ahead. Guess the weather's still changing." Other than this brief mention of country, there was no news to be found about anything beyond county lines. She flipped the paper back over. The front page was of a construction site, a shot of a hole in the ground with a few people standing at its edge. Everyone but one man was looking at the camera. The stray one was staring into the pit like he wanted it to swallow, and he didn't care what. Anna started to stare at it too, the black pixels mingling to a solid, with a blemish in the printing fading one side out to gray. The gold bell hanging at the post office door chattered against the glass. Anna jumped and shut the door of her box. She turned away from it to meet the eyes of gym teacher Jackie Dell. Her dyed brown hair puffed short about her round face. Anna assumed the hair dye box had red mahogany. "Anne, dear, how are you this morning?" The corners of her mouth twitched out too far with each word, like she was trying to make each one a smile. Anna saw the blush on her cheeks crinkle to the foundation. "Jackie," her chest heaved, "how are you?" "Oh, I'm fine, sweetheart, just fine. How are you?" She stepped closer and her jeans folded a pressed line into her thigh. "Fine, thank you. Some weather lately, huh?" Anna opened and shut her mouth with nothing to say and thought briefly of hurricanes. She lifted the paper and the bill up to her waist, grasping them with all 10 fingers. "Well, oh, you've seen the news about the child care center." Jackie locked her eyes to the paper. Anna glanced down and retreated back a tile on the post office floor as Mrs. Dell touched the pages in her hand. "Oh, yes, something, isn't it? You know, I spearheaded the whole thing, and we made the news. We've been getting donations for it left and right." Anna remembered the thermometer gauge outside the old church on Watson Street, the blank white of need stretching 10 times higher than the accumulated red of $30,000. "That's great," she pushed a smile. "Actually, that's not a terribly recent photo. We've poured the footings and the walls are in already, too. The basement walls, I mean, of course." Anna nodded and lifted her eyebrows as Mrs. Dell finished. "Great. It will be. That's just one of the things we're talking about doing to amp up this town, you know. That big dirt hole north of town where the state people dug so they could build up the highway proper." Anna thought, children pushing vegetables out of their bowls. Mrs. Dell continued. People are thinking about a lake, just filling it in with water. You know, I don't know about that, but this, her hand flapped on the newspaper. Always good to build things for the children. If we build it, they will come. Mrs. Dell's arms stretched upward at the word come. Anna wondered if maybe this was how she always climaxed as her eyes dropped back down to Anna's and her purse smile returned. Well, I put a kettle on before I left home, so I'd better be going. Anna shuffled by Jackie as she murmured certainlies, clanging the glass against the bell with a sharp pull. 65 kids in the grade school, and they wanted to attract fresh ones to put in that hole in the ground. The sidewalk outside was covered with chalk from the 4th of July contest a week ago. She scuffed her feet across it, but it had gone too dry to smear. Rain hadn't come to the town since the beginning of June when a big storm had threatened to make harvest tiresome. She looked at the old highway. The road had once led south and west to Hooker, Texas, County, Oklahoma, east to Wichita, and even way down to Tucumcari, New Mexico, if you stayed on it long enough in the right direction. Now it only led to a few houses and dirt roads that really led nowhere but to more dirt and fields. The car was moving slow, 4 blocks away at the edge of town. Apparently someone still wanted to get where it led. She waited for the car, even though the road she had to cross wasn't wide enough to justify her lingering. It was a light blue 4-door, with an older man she didn't recognize holding it steady. He lifted his hand at her. She nodded back. She didn't know him, but he didn't seem to be a stranger. Unlike the traffic on the highway, people who lived here waved at anybody. As if a greeting wasn't to say hello to a friend, but to offer a simple recognition. As if to say, if nothing else, you and I both know that we're here. That's it.
Allison Rose, everybody. Yeah. She has an amazing comedy show at Rebel Restaurant next Monday. Check it out if you are in the neighborhood. She is an amazing and awesome. Yes. One more time, guys. One more time. For as comics, we're like used to people laughing. And then when you do something that doesn't elicit that, it's like the most terrifying thing that's ever happened. So this is awesome. Thank you guys so much. The next person coming to stage, he is a writer with nothing to plug. That's what he told me. But I'm very excited to see what he does. Please welcome to the stage J. Lane Ryan, everybody.
Hello. Dedicating this to a friend of ours, Sarah, who's feeling sad today. Here's to a happier tomorrow. I name this The News, because, yeah. Agatha used her phone's flashlight to locate her flats in the dark. She'd laid out her black Portofino, meticulously pressed gray slacks, and a black cardigan the night before, setting them neatly on the towel rack in front of the toilet. Shoes in hand, she hugged the flashlight to her breast so as to not disturb the children and went into the studio apartment's bathroom to get dressed. Meryl stared as the copier emitted an undignified shriek. It had jammed during the final leg of a rather large job, one-sided triplicate copies of each of the 14 policy disclosure and acknowledgement documents, the first 2 copies for clients to sign and then hand back for relocation into either the client's internal case file or to building management on the first floor, the 3rd copy for the client to keep and presumably misplace or throw away. And despite the cartoonish diagrammatic prompt on the copier's display conveying to the operator, in this case Merrill, where the problem was and how to resolve it, Merrill was generally exasperated enough to just say, fuck it. He turned to Tom and rolled his eyes. Tom was looking at his shoes. We got 20 of each of the first 3 packets? It stuck after 13 on the last one. The copier kept shrieking. What do we do with the 7 extras each of the first 3? Throw them in the trash? Well, answered Tom, recycling bin, but sure. Merrill reached forward and lifted the cooling pile of paper sheets from the landing tray. He then turned to Tom, and they left the copier, which was still shrieking about, one would assume, the paper jam. passive-aggressive texts between them, neither really wanting to submit, so they punctuated the most recent exchange with emoji hearts. Punctuation that looked like it had been slammed in a door and was now tumescent like a blood blister. Ben had frantically texted Merrill after Iris had pawed the heating grate up again and had begun to descend into the vents of the building that had once been the centerpiece of a timber baron's estate and now comprised six bougie apartments with variously angled views of the public park. Before, Ben had been fortuitously situated, where he was able to save the cat from himself. The last time was able only to grab the cat's tail and, lifting him from the vent, sustained deep claw marks in his wrist and the back of his right hand, the latter wound still requiring saline irrigation and disinfecting at the walk-in clinic off 13th. Your cat's gotten into the vent for real this time. Send. Three dots. Is he still in there? Yes. Send. Three dots. Get him out. Trying. Send. Three dots. When you get him out, tape the ducks down like last winter. Heart thing. Send. Three dots. Heart thing. Despite the direction of the current of heated air, Ben decided to sprinkle a little baggie, sprinkle catnip from a little baggie in the kitchen junk drawer all around the vent. And in a seemingly ceremonious pagan-looking circle, Ben also placed Iris's favorite treats. Agatha half squatted at the bus stop, trying by exerting herself slightly to warm her body up. The sun was rising, but she'd be on the next transfer by the time that event would be able to significantly alter the temperature. When the bus came and when the driver yelled at her in a thick, booming, timpani drum voice, Agatha smiled, bowed, and took her seat. The bus driver, having turned to face her, and with the bus still idling at the stop, continued to yell, glaring at her with eyes that were both piercing and distracted, hazed over by tremendous distance. To Merrill, it seemed reasonably acceptable, if not appropriate, to the extent they weren't expected to engage, address, or resolve sensitive concerns of the members of the public who frequented their building, that admin and support staff had petitioned HR to be allowed to, mind the scare quotes here, observe Halloween. Yet, it was both unreasonable and inappropriate that HR had acquiesced, and it was downright grotesquely unacceptable, just utterly ridiculous, that HR had made the new policy essentially universal, save security, though now there were rumors that even they would be permitted to wear animal ears and collars, after Becca had peppered her grievance with various besuffixed and prefixed declensions of the term justice and emailed everyone, so now service and front office staff were allowed to participate. Which would be okay, fine, if Merrill's peers had actually read the Code of Ethics and Employee Handbook, but Merrill knew in his heart that likely more than half of his culturally atonal dumbfuck coworkers would come into the office today in rabbit suits and shit and then just actually wear these throughout their shifts. I think it's absolutely ridiculous. These addled buffoons will be in vacuum-formed lemming masks and plush panda heads handing out We're accepting food assistance apps, telling people through vampire teeth the volunteer requirements for receiving aid. And Ben kept texting about the fucking cat. Ben had called the fire department and the super about Iris, begging for advice as to what to do. What about the jaws of life? Ben inquired to the clearly exhausted fireman. Glenn, the super, allowed his face to twist into horror and aggravation at Ben's imposition. Look, the cat will come out. He's been down there for hours. Actually, Ben had no idea what time Iris had descended. He tugged sideways at the last text he'd made to Merrill. 9:51. For 2.5 hours. He needs to eat. We can't just rip up the floorboards because of a cat. Agatha's bus led her off a 10-minute walk from her destination. She hurried as best she could, but an arthritic knee and certainty of black ice on her pathway held her to an easy pace. Her phone said it was 7:15. The office itself would open only 15 minutes from now. She pulled the notice out of her cardigan. She was not clear as to what it said, but she was sure she'd been given money. But why did her card not work? She would talk to someone, clear it up, her nice Portofino tucked snugly into her still-creased pants. Margisio was running around without Agatha today. although Agatha might catch up with her later. It was a risk if anyone came to audit their route, or if a client wondered why there was only one lady doing two ladies' work. But Agatha didn't get paid until the middle of next month, and she and the children had not really eaten anything except the rationed yet dwindled contents of a bag of freezer-burned pierogies given to them by Bert when Alexei had cried about being hungry. Merrill had stopped checking his texts. But then the call came through as he was going over the combination lock policy and explaining to Eddie, who had a fucking question in response to everything Merrill managed to get out of his mouth, why replacement locks cost $20 when he, Eddie, could easily go to Ace or wherever and get a perfectly good lock for $5. It's like library books, Eddie, Merrill had begun when the phone, which had been vibrating in his pocket all morning, now seemed to be silently notifying him in a way that voiced something like residual or ghostly urgency. Excuse me, he told the group. The caller ID read a string of digits that did not seem to add up to a working telephone number. As he hit accept, he wondered, what, the fucking cat? Denver Police Department. Why would the police fucking give a shit about a shitty little cat? The term ambition, Agatha had read once, comes from a Latin term signifying a citizen, aspirant of public office, going door to door asking neighbors and strangers to vote for them. It was a thought that bubbled up as the automatic doors opened for her right at 8. The website had said 7:30, but this apparently referred to the building, as the offices in which stood the kiosks she was anxiously yet determined to approach remained closed for a further half hour. Silly, she thought, though as a pragmatic and oft-times stoic Pole, she got that's just how it was. The doors opened, and she was, to her relief, first in line. Again, she pulled the notice from her cardigan pocket and unfolded it. Bold print, red and yellow inks, embossed with a seal that ran like a secret between her thumb and index. And then a loud buzzing shriek. The metal sheaths enclosing teller windows slid open, and Agatha, here at the front of the line, alone between plastic pylons and faux velvet ropes, was greeted with four equally expectant faces, all seemingly equally anticipating Agatha's case. In unison, how can we help you? Followed by one offbeat and throwaway, next. Agatha stepped in any direction, lacking anything like surety. She shuffled towards window two, notice held out before her like an offering, hunger in her heart, towards the initially kind, yet increasingly impatient eyes of a panda bear.
Jaylane Ryan, everybody. Thank you. He said he doesn't have anything to plug, but his wife, is partner, I don't know what term they use, I'm so sorry, but she is an amazing photographer. She did my headshots, so check her out. Carnifex Photography. Okay. I'm sorry. If you want, I'll plug you next time if you have your own thing. Be as cool as your wife. And then, okay, good. I did it. Okay. All right. We're going to keep this right on going. We had her open the show, but I wanted to bring her back out here so she can show you guys really what she does. She is awesome. Please welcome back to the stage Piper Shepherd, everybody.
Okay. I'm going to the disco, going to the disco, going to the disco, and I want to meet a cute hoe, bisexual, please, intersectionality, into polyamory, how and when did I forget how to let you in? You're more than just my friend. I'm looking for a boyfriend, looking for a girlfriend, looking for a Z friend, looking for a me friend. bisexual, please, intersectionality into polyamory, into polyamory. How and when did I forget how to let you in? You're more than just my friend. But can we just pretend? I wanna be their friend. I wanna let them in. I wanna be your friend because I want you to know. I want you to know about the lovers on the East Coast. Man, I gotta tell you about. Man, I gotta tell you about. About the lovers on the West Coast. How and when did I forget how to let them in? They're more than just my friends. In my queer residence, I wanna let you in. I wanna be a friend. I wanna let them in. I wanna be their friend. In my queer residence. In my queer residence. In my queer residence. In my queer residence.
Piper Shepherd, yeah, she's awesome. She is the frontman of an amazing band here in Denver called Calamity Champs, as well as an amazing comedian, so anytime you see her name on anything, please check it out. She is awesome. All right, we have two more performers for you tonight. I'm so excited for this one. I watched her run a writing seminar this morning, which those two words together don't sound fun, but it was very fun and awesome. She is the author of a best-selling crime novel, Painting with Fire, and a literary novel called Storm of Stories. They're all sold here, so if you like what you hear right now, go buy her book. Please welcome to the stage KB Jensen, everyone.
Okay, so I wrote this one when an Ebola outbreak was on the news, and the story has nothing to do with Ebola, but it's a good background to know. It's called Grandma. It's like a horror film. I'm only 30 years old, but one morning I wake up and I have changed into my grandmother overnight. With the first few steps out of bed, at first, I barely notice. I can tell my posture is off as I hobble my way to the bathroom. I feel shorter. I go to brush my teeth and I drop the toothbrush on the floor, and when I look in the mirror, there she is, my grandmother, staring back at me. Her wrinkled face has a certain amount of charm, I admit. Her white billowy hair and faded blue-gray eyes. I touch the rough skin on my face. I tug on one of my earlobes. It has gotten longer. My breasts have, too. As I reach down to pick up my toothbrush off the tile floor, they hang long and tube-like from my chest, so much lower than they used to. In a panic, I run back into my bedroom, taking short, quick breaths, and grab my cell phone off the nightstand. I call my doctor's office as fast as I can, my hands shaking as I punch in the numbers. "It's Mary Nelson," I say. "I need to see Dr. Williams right away." "What's the health issue?" the receptionist asks. "Have you traveled to West Africa recently?" It's not Ebola, I say in my voice trembling old lady-like. I don't know what it is, but it's definitely not Ebola. Okay, ma'am, but what's wrong exactly? I seem to have aged 50 years overnight, I say. I'm feeling frail, not like myself. Okay, then, the receptionist says in an unsure voice that makes me doubt she believes me. Well, I've got you down for 2 p.m. I go into the kitchen and open the fridge. It's harder to open than it used to be. My bicep muscles have gone slack. What's left of my triceps now hang loosely with sagging skin dangling from my arms. I pull out a carton of eggs and start boiling 3 of them. The pot of water is so heavy it takes me 2 hands to lift it. I time the eggs for exactly 10 minutes, toss them in cold water, and then crack and eat them in the at the kitchen table. As I'm swallowing a soft orange yolk, I realize that this was what she ate for breakfast every day, my grandmother. Then I start to crave a glass of red wine. Strange, she was an alcoholic. Granted, she hid it well, I think, but really, Grandma, it's not even noon. I wander into the living room and pull out a photo album with her in it. I look at the picture and walk over to the hallway mirror. I glance at the photo and my reflection. There are my new eyes, her old eyes looking back at me. There's my new old mouth. Granted, it's a little more weathered with time. Is it just a resemblance, or am I really her? I decide to get dressed. That should be easy enough, except none of my clothes fit me anymore. My grandmother had a body like an egg with skinny little legs underneath a rounded torso, and so do I now. I pull on my favorite purple sweater. It's too short, doesn't even cover my rounded belly. I put on a yellow t-shirt. It mashes my boobs into weird shapes, like 2 overripened pieces of fruit. My mostly fit 30-year-old body is gone, and the funny thing is, my pants are too loose. It's like the weight has been redistributed in odd places. I stand in front of the mirror, staring in horror and disbelief. I put the sweater back on, pulling it down periodically, trying to stretch it out, but I can feel it riding up. I go back into my room, lay down on my bed, and I think about her. What would she have done? She would have locked herself in her room drinking. That's an option, I guess, but no, I don't want to do that, not yet. Henry, my boyfriend, can always tell when I'm having a bad day. Like some kind of psychic, he calls. Hey, babe, you want to meet for lunch, he asks. Not today, I say, my voice shaking. I don't want him to see me like this. He loves me, but does he love me enough to date me as a senior citizen? I'm not feeling well, I say. Okay, I'll stop by after work and bring you some soup or something, he says. No, no, that's okay. I don't want you to catch this, whatever this is, I say. Thanks, though. Once I hang up, I decide I can't wait until 2 p.m. I have to see Dr. Williams immediately. I put on my jacket, my floppy sun hat, and a pair of large sunglasses. I don't want anyone else to see me like this. I get in my car, slump in the driver's seat, and adjust the rearview mirror lower to adjust for my shrunken height. I catch a glimpse of myself in the mirror and rummage through my purse. I apply some lipstick, smear my lips unevenly with a deep red. It can't hurt, I think sheepishly. I have to keep trying to look my best. My thoughts race, but the drive is slow. I'm not sure why, but I can't seem to push my foot down hard enough on the gas pedal to go past 20 miles per hour. It takes me ages to parallel park. Twisting my tight neck to look back behind the car, I hear a crack. It startles me to realize my body made that sound. Then I hear another sound, a thwack noise from the car behind me as I hit it with my bumper. I pull forward a few inches and get out. Oh my, I say out loud as I inspect the damage. Gosh darn. I even talk like her, I realize. For a moment, I ponder if I should leave a note. Squinting more closely, I convince myself that surely that scratch was there before. Besides, it's barely noticeable. Or maybe it is noticeable. Is my vision blurry? Grandma always did wear glasses. I squint harder, quickly scribble a note with my information and an apology, and leave it on the windshield. Paying the bill is the least of my worries at this moment. I walk into the doctor's office. I sit in one of those uncomfortable chairs and take out one of the magazines stacked at the table next to me. I stare at the supermodels in glossy pages. Their skin is so young-looking, so firm. I touch my sagging cheeks with my fingers. Dr. Williams says when he sees me. To be honest, I barely recognized you. What do you think the problem is, doctor? I ask. He presses the cold, round part of his stethoscope against the wrinkled skin of my chest and listens to my heart pound. You know, This really isn't my area of expertise, he says. Your vitals are fine. You aren't running a temperature. You appear healthy. I think you'd be better off seeing a dermatologist. A dermatologist? I say, my voice getting loud. You've got to be kidding. What kind of moisturizer do you use, he says, just out of curiosity. I don't use any moisturizer, I say. Well, maybe that's your problem, he says. Doctor, I don't think you are taking this seriously enough, I say, my voice rising an octave. Can't you at least run some blood tests to find out what's going on? For the love of Pete! I cringe as I hear her words come out of my mouth. He sends me to the lab, where the nurse gives me a quizzical look after glancing at my chart. Is this date of birth correct, she asks, and your insurance information? I'm not sure which one she is more concerned with. I look away as she takes vials and vials of my bright red blood from a blue protruding vein at the inside of my elbow. Dr. Williams will call you sometime next week with the results, she says, smiling. She tapes on the cotton ball and pats me on the arm. Is that supposed to be reassuring, I wonder? I leave the office with a referral to a dermatologist, but the next appointment isn't available for 2 months. 2 months. I cry in my car, bow my head against the steering wheel, and sob like a little girl. No. No, there's got to be something I can do about this, I think. So I drive slowly to the pharmacy. I buy some age-defying moisturizer, and I slather it all over my face as soon as I get back into the car. When I pull up to my house, there's Henry waiting for me at the door. I walk up to him, and he puts an arm around me. You didn't sound right on the phone, he says. I thought I'd come over and check on you. But Henry, look at me, I say, taking off my sunglasses and whipping off my hat. I'm not all right. I'm so old. I've given up, I think. I'm going to go inside, shut the door, and start drinking red wine immediately. Mary, whatever this is, we'll deal with it together. He pushes back a wisp of my white billowy hair behind my ear. Can you deal with this? I say, pulling down my V-neck sweater, showing off my stretched-out wrinkled boobs. One of them has fallen out of my bra, sinking lower than the other. He pauses for a moment, then looks me in the eye as he grips my shoulders. Mary, your appearance doesn't matter. Your physique doesn't matter, he says. It doesn't matter. I love you, and I want to be old with you. Really? I say. Really, he says. And just like that, I'm 30 again. Thank you.
KB Jensen, everybody. That was so awesome. Okay. All right. We have one more performer for you guys. I'm sorry. I'm just going to have to say it. Please welcome to the stage the news, everybody. The news.
Hip to be square.
Cut the music. I'm sure you all already know who I am. But I am I'm a member of the most famous cover band of all time. Huey Dewey, a guy named Lewis, in the news. I am the news. A lot of people are like, how are you in a band with two cartoon ducks? What was that like, the news, you the news, being in a band with two cartoon ducks? I'll tell you what, I have some DuckTales. Some DuckTales for you guys. I have a lot of a lot of tales for you guys. I'm out promoting my new book. It's called It's Fit to Be Here. It's the tales of Huey, Dewey, a guy named Lewis, and the news. A lot of people say your name isn't really the news, is it? It is. It's actually my middle and my last name. My first name is Spreadin. My dad was a really big Frank Sinatra fan. He's into it. So people always say, hey, Spreadin. What's the news? People say, hey, Spreadin', have you heard the news? And I'm like, yeah, I'm the fucking news. I've heard the news. No. We were killing it in 84 and 85. We sold over 15 million records. Well, the band that I cover sold over 15 million records. We had a record that was on the charts for 152 weeks. I mean, the band that I covered had a record. What I'm saying is we were playing some pretty big bars, all right? We were playing some pretty big bars around that time. I mean, I'm talking 60, 70 people sometimes. Crowds fucking 10 times the size of this, all right? We were big. There was weeks, you guys probably won't even believe this, there was weeks that I made $450. We were fucking killing it. We were killing it. The guys were cranking out the hits. Me and the cartoon ducks and that guy named Lewis were spreading the news. And then they had to fuck everything up. It wasn't drugs, no. It was jazz. They made a fucking jazz album. What the fuck were they thinking? They thought people that liked Power of Love liked fucking jazz. People that liked the Heart of Rock and Roll liked fucking jazz. I still remember the last gig that we played together in 2006 in Buskick, Florida. Just say there's a lot of gators in Buskick, all right? There's a lot of fuck. I mean, even the women there are gators. I mean, I'm serious. There was no women at the show. There was three female alligators, though. There's three alligators that were female. About four male alligators. And a handler. And it was a tough show. You guys are 10 times the audience that seven alligators and a handler are. I'll tell you what, this is my first show back, and you guys are making me miss it. You're making me miss it. But yeah, I still remember, you know, thinking that everything was lost, you know, on the bus back from Buskick. And then I found a book on the bus that kind of changed my life. Have you guys heard about the Law of Attraction? So now, not only am I spreading the news, spreading that too. You brought us all here tonight. I feel very lucky to perform again. I've been the news. Thank you very much.
The news, everybody. Guys, thank you so much for coming out to Queen City. If you're interested in performing, please let me know. I'm going to have the bucket out back by the door. If you have any donations, it will go all back to the performers. They're not getting paid otherwise, so just keep that in mind. But otherwise, we'll be back first Thursday of the month next month with another theme. The theme will be family for December. Appropriate, just to emotionally prepare ourselves for that torture. And we will see you then, guys. Thank you so much. Have a wonderful night. Drive safe.
Mutiny Transmissions is a media service that provides podcasts, video, and live shows recorded inside and outside of Mutiny Information Cafe, located at 2 South Broadway in Denver, Colorado.